Welcome to the Parent Equation Podcast with me, Aisha Murray. This podcast series is full of inspiring stories from working parents who are passionate about designing a life that works for them and their families. Working parents like you, who want a purposeful, rewarding career alongside a balanced family life. So today I'm joined by Natalie Shering. Natalie, I'm first going to say, is just fabulous and has an amazing voice and a lovely lilt, which we'll hear in a second. Natalie is a leadership coach, also co-hosts Walking Partnerships, which we can talk about in a second, is an ex-nurse and a forest bather, and has two girls in her family. So busy, busy, busy. So welcome, Natalie.
Thanks, Aisha. It's lovely to be with you today. Thank you for having me.
No, you're welcome. And there is so much to talk about. As I said, a few things there. Ex-nurse, now leadership coach. A forest bather, and I have been in your presence in a forest, which I thoroughly enjoyed and was quite amazed by your knowledge of the forest. So we can talk about that in a second. So I guess just from your story, I guess, point of view, nursing is a big career. Nursing, obviously, it's, you invest time and energy and passion into nursing. So how did it go, I guess? How did you make the shift from nursing into what is now leadership coaching in this sort of forest walking partnerships?
Lovely question, Aisha. And actually, interestingly, nursing wasn't where I intended to go. I was a very good student. I was a top rated student when I was at school. I was at school at Lovely Heriot's in Edinburgh, and I was doing smashingly well. And then I remember sitting my hires, a little bit like your A levels here, and opening my papers and just going, I don't recognise any of this stuff. In fact, I don't think anyone's ever taught me this stuff. And had a complete calamity and failed a whole load of stuff. I think I got 3 out of my 5, or maybe I got 2 out of my 5 hires. I'm not sure. So my idea to go and do medicine was, a pin was put firmly in that ambition. And so I had to have a think about that and, you know, supported well to think, well, actually, how do you pivot? And that's really informed how I've thought about my career ever since. I have a lot of capabilities, as everyone does. You've got this brilliance inside of you. And if you believe in that, you can move around lots of different things. So I've got this squiggly line, I guess. But what has been prompted by mostly is a real passion for people. And that desire to help everyone achieve their greatest potential. So, understand, uncover, celebrate their skills, and then apply them in a different way. And nursing's like that, you know, it's health goals, and that was certainly good. But I noticed that my time in nursing, I got further and worked further away from the privilege of caring.
Yeah,
we got sucked more into the system, and that was hard. So I wanted to change. I moved off into the corporate space and did lots of different sales jobs and managing jobs and doing big projects and all sorts of stuff for in the pharmaceutical sector. And then I had I call it an opportunity, because for me it really was an opportunity to take redundancy in 2018. And I knew through the work that I'd been doing that there was just something else out there that I felt a calling towards, and that through our mutual friend Annie Townend, we linked up and I started into the leadership space. And I love it. It is absolutely my joy to do the work that I do with the fabulous clients that I get to work with. To do forest bathing as you and I have done together, to bring nature into that and really unlock the human potential, because it's boundless. It's exciting. And all too often I notice my clients and my colleagues feel a bit constrained by the world of the possible, what potential do we have? And nature does a great job of reminding us of just how vast our ambitions can be. So yeah, that's a little bit of a trot through. Yeah, a bit wandered, I think, but a little bit.
That constraints are interesting, because I think that when we saw about corporate and he mentioned the word sales and then he said leadership, and I know this is not the case because I'm a coach too, but those words sound quite constraining. They sound quite big building, you know, sort of four walls, you're in a building, you're doing a corporate job, you're doing a sales job, you're doing a, you know, leadership executive job. And then when you talk about nature and that expanse, as soon as you take anything out of those four walls and you break down those constraints, and as you say, the possibilities are endless, you can open your minds to opportunities. So I suppose, how can we, when we are sitting in our four walls, as we are a lot these days, and we have jobs that require us to sit in four walls, whether at home or in office, how can we bring some of that thinking and maybe shift our mindsets a bit to bring in sort of the nature element and try and keep be more expansive, but while we're sitting physically in a building. Mm. Is there a way of doing that, you think?
Well, I think there probably is. It's a great question. I must say, I'm sure I've thought about it before, but I don't have a neat answer to it. Actually, interestingly, behind my screen as I'm speaking to you now, I have a little, it's an old printer's drawer, actually. So when printing was still done by hand, little drawers with all the dyes in them. And I've got in there a variety of different little things that I call my treasures. And I've picked them up as I've gone along. So there's some fossils in there. There's a bit of moss that I'm looking at. There's some shells. You know, actually having some of nature around you physically where you are, something tactile to touch and feel. Yeah. So we're engaging our senses in a different way. I'm very fortunate. I have a great big window. You can see the brightness to my right-hand side here. You know, I'll quite often sit in my chair. I'm standing today, but I'll sit in my chair, just swing my feet around and look out the window and see what's happening. You know, our brains are not designed to be always on. We have these two different systems in our brains, the executive function and our default function. We really motor on the executive function. What do I need to do? Where's my list? What are the things I need to do? What do I tend to? Where when we engage in a different way, when we use our different senses, when we, you know, visually look out at something, we start to engage our default function, which helps our executive function rest a little bit. We get creative, our mind wanders, we daydream, and suddenly our possibilities do become endless. So, you know, I don't know that we need to move. I think we need to make the environment ready to help us grasp those moments. So maybe it is. I can't see it just now. I think it's in the treasures. I've got a little fossil, a little stone that's maybe about this size. It's quite small, but in the centre of that is a fossilised leaf, and the backside of it is extremely smooth, but the front side of it, where this fossil is quite textured. And sometimes just holding that and rubbing that, you know, and closing your eyes and just reconnecting with the speck of time that the human existence is, it really slows your mind, helps you engage in a different way, and starts to give you a bit of perspective that maybe can save you from that sense of having your head in the blender, you know, just going around 100 miles an hour, just there's the to-do list, you know, so a little bit of slowing down.
I've got an image of myself now going out and buying some turf and putting it under my desk.
Lovely.
I'm putting my bare feet on the turf.
Loving that idea.
It might get a bit mouldy on the floor. I might need some TLC or put it in some kind of
a little planter.
A little planter. I just put my feet on it under desk rather than on the floor.
That's a lovely idea. Or anything, you know, just something something that's natural, tactile. You know, I'm now looking to my right. I've got one of our walking partnership mugs sitting here. There's a lovely long black blue feather that I picked up from somewhere. Mm. And then something else, and I'm rubbish at the names of this of plants particularly. I'm a bit rubbish at them. And I've got that sitting there. And it's just looking at it and thinking, well, that bird was flying somewhere. Where was it going? What was its journey? Look at the beauty of the design of that feather that is precisely calibrated to be perfect at doing what it does. You know, what's perfectly calibrated to me to help me be perfect at what I need to do? How do I celebrate that more often? Because it's a feather. Do you see loads of them lying on the ground? But I spot them all the time. My poor wife goes, don't pick that up. It's going to be Mankey. I'm like, I love that. Up. It's coming home.
Mankey pigeon fella feather.
Not so much pigeon feathers, but definitely this thing was so beautiful. I was like, oh, that's coming home. She's like,
I think that's so important, because I think we, as you said, this head in a blender, which is a brilliant analogy. We are so, and it is an executive mind, you know, working. We're just so in our bubbles, aren't we? Every day we're in our bubble of this constant, especially with kids, which we'll come on to talking about, obviously, where it's, and I talk about this quite a lot with people and with my therapist regularly, that there's always a need. Someone always needs you or one. So kids need us, spouses need us, partners need us, family members need us, elderly parents need us, work needs us, clients need us. And it's all this need, and taking everything from us in this bubble, in this blender.
Mm.
And actually the whole world out there. So how do we allow ourselves, give ourselves permission, I guess, all the time, to say, just stop for a second, everybody, life, get out of the bubble, look at the feathers, just, you know, just realize that we're just tiny speck, aren't we, in everything. And maybe if we change our perspective on that speck, it would help us break out of that a bit.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, it's a lovely thought. I think as you're speaking, it puts me in mind of something I often speak to clients about. We sort of have a chuckle about it because it's slightly pithy, but, you know, there's a reason why when you get onto an airplane and you sit down and they're doing the safety briefing and they say, if we lose pressure, a mask will drop from above you. Take that mask, pull it firmly towards you, which will release the oxygen. Put it over your mouth and nose and adjust firmly. Do this before you help anyone else. You know, we need to ensure that our own flow is clean and clear. And so to do that, we have to make sure there are no kinks. Mm-hmm. There's nothing obstructing. So taking the time to care for ourselves then immediately enables us to care for others.
Yeah.
We simply cannot do it. If we don't care for ourselves first, mm-hmm. then the care that we give to others is not as rich as it could be. You know, and unburdening ourselves of that need. You know, I am a step parent, and we will come on to this, no doubt. So the dynamic is different.
Yeah.
But, you know, the I can't find my socks. Well, you probably just need to look a little bit harder. You don't need me to break away from doing what I'm doing to come and find that. Mm-hmm. You know, I often speak with my wife and say, you know, we're enabling the kids to be productive, capable, sustainable adults. We're not there to be everything to them all the time. And that is easy for a step parent. Well, for me, it is easy to say. I'm only N equals one of the step parents. I don't speak for the entire universe of step parents. But that slight separation, which says our role is something different beyond just doing all of it. And how do we take that out into the rest of the world? We're not always on. We don't need to always be on.
No, no. So how do we, that's a great example, and it's very, very poignant, because we're always in this, similarly, this sort of conundrum of wanting to help our children because we love them and we want to, you know, we want to help, but allowing them to be independent and work it out for themselves and not rely on us all the time, especially with simple things like finding socks, which happens on a regular basis.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know what, I mean, I don't ever lose a sock, right? But I have never seen a pair of socks on the girls. Not a matching pair, anyway. I'm like, what?
It's a bizarre.
That and pants. Oh, and leggings. Also, leggings seem to be there's some sort of black hole monster in our house that devours leggings and Nike Pros.
And Nike Pro, what's in shoes?
Nike Pros. These, no, Nike Pro, like, they're like,
oh, short leggings. That's an expensive thing to lose.
Well, not shoes, at least. No, the shoes seem to be okay. They're slightly larger. But yeah. It's like, what?
So to that point, and talking about bringing in the coaching and bringing in the being mindful of having, wanting to assist but not have people depend on us or kids depend on us, where is it where we stop the just bloody do it and do it yourself please and leave me alone for a second, giving them a sense of empowerment to want to do it for themselves and to think, actually I want to do this by myself rather than to ask mummy or daddy or whoever, where does that, I'm feeling quite desperate here, where does that come from?
I wouldn't be quite so egotistical to tell you I think I have an answer, but I think there's something around that space of, you know, asking the questions. So it's easy to run, we're coaches, right? So we know that what we shouldn't do is go, hey, do you know, I think you should just do this. This is a great idea, I know the answer, I'm going to tell you what it is. Actually, we fall into that trap with our children all the time. You want to, you should do this. Instead, flipping that on its head and saying, well, what would a coach say to the child? Well, what are your options? What would it mean if you did that? And what would it mean if you did that? And, you know, sometimes that is met with utter infuriation and teenage angst. And sometimes, you know, quite often in the car, the side by side, our friend Annie would talk about them, the side by side conversations, where there's an opportunity for silence and space for that then to percolate and to come out. And maybe no answer comes, but suddenly then the action happens. You know, we've certainly, Katie, bless her, she's been doing some work down in Worthing, and we're slightly north of Worthing. So Lucy and I can't run her all the time. And in fact, you know, I've been a little bit of a sort of stalwart on this and said, we're not running her all the time. So she's been having to get the bus. That's been quite hard. She found that quite difficult. You know, but noticing how suddenly there was a lot of sort of angst, challenge. Mm. And then suddenly there was like, oh, I'm getting the bus. Okay, see you later. Well done. Brilliant. Patience.
Yeah.
You know, and again, the head in the blender, when you've got a to-do list that's as long as your arms and legs and everything else. And, you know, we just, like the adults, sometimes we just need time to come to something, diffused of the emotion of the moment. And that thinking happens because they're brilliant people. They're just small adults. Mm-hmm. They've got different thinking processes at the moment. But if we can give them a little bit of space and maybe a bit of encouragement to have a think about things and not be always on, then, you know, the components are changing. So something has to change.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's sort of how we're trying to go about it. Sometimes successfully, Aisha. Sometimes spectacularly, disastrously. But that is a roller coaster of parenthood.
It is. Oh, it absolutely is. And I was trying to do that this morning when my oldest, who's 12, and in her sort of, I suppose, the throes of having to look in the mirror quite a lot before she goes to school, just sort of wear her hair strands out, etc. And I know I've been there. It's allowing her to do that. So rather than interjecting with my "wear your socks, have you done this?" and putting my blender emotions, I suppose, into the mix, I try to think, okay, she's doing her hair. That's important to her. We are cutting into time and we have got a limited window of time this morning, but I'll just let her do what she needs to do and then deal with whatever comes in the next 10 minutes after that, rather than then putting more into her mind, panicking her. Then that obviously then panics me. We both end up in this blender spiral, which ultimately helps nobody, end up in shouting and tears and whatever. So I think, the word patience used there is absolutely key, actually. I need more of it, but it's a definite one. Just let them be.
Yeah, you know, and it's hard, right? Because we do feel this. You know, we're like on a treadmill. Look, it's this universal treadmill that's dialed to 10, and it's false. It's totally false. We're not all rushing. We don't need to rush. What are we rushing for? What are we doing? You know, school starts at like 8:30 or whatever it is. You know, if you know how long it takes you and what the traffic's going to be like, well, then, you know, that's okay. We're probably going to make it. If you're late by 5 minutes, is the world going to end? Yeah. Probably not.
No.
You know, but it's taking that, I suppose, trying to diffuse that pressure for all of us, and people having patience with one another. Caring deeply that actually you've got your stuff going on, I've got my stuff going on. If that means it goes a little bit pear-shaped at some point, well then let's be careful with how people arrive. See them and be with them as they arrive and say, hey, okay, we're 5 minutes late, that's fine. So let's play the hand that we have. We can't create more time,
which brings me actually onto the subject of time. And something that I find clients saying a lot to me is, but I haven't got the time. And I always say, yes, you have. We've all got the same amount of time. 4 hours in a day. We can all find the time if we, again, about permission, give ourselves permission to focus those chunks of time on the things that matter to us and potentially push some things aside that maybe are not necessary or too time consuming, whatever it is. But I think it's, again, that conscious decision that we have time. You all have the same amount of time. And to your point of working backwards from 8:30 school start, someone I spoke to earlier today, just a random connection, wakes up at 5 in the morning. I don't do that. Cannot do that.
Me neither.
But this time, her choice is to wake up at 5. She does a 5K walk. She does some yoga. She has her cup of tea. She has her shower. And then by 6:30, when the kids get up, she's absolutely set for the day. She is just in a great place mentally and emotionally. So she has found the time. Doesn't work for me, too early. But there are ways we can all do that. So what do you do to find time in your busy, busy day?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. So I'm really interested in the word of find and made. Find didn't suddenly materialise. She's made deliberately, purposefully that time. To know that helps her have a great foundation for the rest of the day. And I think there's the difference between the passive and the active in those two words. So making time, choosing to do it. So, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I'm not sure that I'm, in fact, not that I'm not sure. I do not have that routine. I like my bed. And, you know, I'm not bad. I can get up early, but I don't have a particular routine in the morning. I get up, I usually make Lucy coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker or tea drinker. So I get up and I make her coffee and, you know, do that, unload the dishwasher, you know, all that sort of stuff. I'll probably come and put my computer on, see what the chat is. And then I'll bimble about until I have to do something. And I try not to race at stuff. Some days are really busy, and that's not the case. But it pretty much always starts with making Lucy a cup of coffee. And, you know, I don't reflect on that heavily, but there is something nice about that.
Mm.
Little routine that gets into. But what I do definitely do is I make deliberately time in my year to have time where I'm not working. So I've just been away in France with the grown ups, i.e., my sister, my mum, my sister's partner, and Lucy. So we've had a week away, and I was really struck. My sister and I bought these make your own slippers in a lovely little village called Mirepoix, there in the south near the Pyrenees. And I was reflecting on that idea of we have to do things with our head, our heart, and our hands. And a lot of the work that you and I will do definitely is this intellectual. It's in the head, and a lot of it's in the heart. But I make deliberately time to do things with my hands through the year. So, you know, I was in Orkney at the beginning of the year doing photography, which I love. Again, creating, being outside in the wild. I've got adventures lined up with my sister at the end of September. I've got time again doing photography at the end of the year. I didn't do nearly any work in August. And I didn't do a lot of thinking in August. I did a lot of handwork, creating things, fixing stuff, bodging stuff mostly beyond fixing it. But, you know, so there's that sort of balance of saying, where are my energies going towards? What am I maybe neglecting? What am I overplaying? And how do I get that balance back? Because we look, these are what transformed us from furry apes into opposable thumb engineers and technicians. You know, we have this innate desire to do things with our hands, to be creative with our hands. And we often switch that off in service of the heart, the emotional, or the head, the intellectual. So I think that's where I make deliberately time to do things that I'm trying to align those three things, the head, the heart, and the hand, to get a bit better balance.
And I really like the idea of making time across the year rather than, which perhaps I'm also guilty of, is the weekly sort of thing. So I need to find time in the week to do something for me, whatever it is. Was actually, and that in itself become quite constraining because then you've got added pressure. I need to find some time to make some time to do whatever it is. And that's another thing then to do. Was actually think about it in a slightly longer period of time, maybe even over a month or whatever it is, but chunks of time rather than these sort of snatched hour here and hour there, which actually realistically doesn't feel like time because you're if you're shoehorning into other things, it's not really, the quality is not particularly there. But having a chunk of time spread across the year where you can really invest in yourself and in your creativity and your whatever it is you need to do, maybe is a easier way to start making that time.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's a privilege, right, to be able to do it. You know, I knew that my March, April, May, June, and as it turned out, July, certainly the first 3 months of that was going to be extremely busy. I knew that I needed to top up my energy levels and my sense of purpose and just that knowledge of being one to be creative and to be in the outdoors. And so I had a week in my camper van in Orkney in between Storm Eunice and Storm Franklin. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it was cold. It was quite wet. It was mad. It was amazing. And I've created some really beautiful images and been to a set of islands I had not been to before. I've been to the Shetlands, but I'd never been to Orkney. And I was able to come back from that feeling really invigorated and know then that I was going to work quite hard, not continually, but work very, you know, really very hard across those months with the knowledge that in August I wasn't going to do really any, I wasn't going to take on any new work. I would service what was ever required, but I wouldn't take on a new work. And I maybe did, I don't know, 3 days of work in August and then had a hot week away with my family. You know, had a week away with Lucy and the girls in at the end of July. So there's these sort of islands of really deliberate time where you say, actually, that's for me, it's specific. And I'm going to remove myself from my environment that's the normal environment. And I'm going to take time to be in nature. And I do take days out where I'll go and just be in the forest. And the kids will laugh, like, what are you doing today? I'm like, I'm going to the forest. Like, yeah, you're a weirdo. I'm like, yeah, well, I might be a weirdo, but I'm happy, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm not asking you to do it. It's all fine. You know, so knowing that actually I feel better when I do that. And noticing, again, it's so much about noticing. We'll talk about this with our clients so often. What are you noticing in yourself? What's embodied? You know, what feels right and wrong? And just taking those punctuation points to recharge. Going back to our oxygen mask, we can't help anyone else if we can't help ourselves first.
Yeah. And linking to the oxygen mask analogy there, have I told you that my escape, as in how can I get myself away from my environment as much as possible, is I'm starting flying lessons in a week.
Amazing. Yes, I saw that. That looks brilliant.
That is taking myself literally off the ground.
Totally.
Something completely different.
Absolutely fantastic. That is exciting. Very exciting.
So let's just talk about the family setup, because you've already mentioned you're a stepmom and you have teenage stepdaughters. Mm. So that in itself is a whole different ballgame. Yeah. How does that work for you? And have you made, I suppose, have you made that setup work for you and for Lucy and the kids?
Yeah, so that is a great question. And how have we made it work? I don't know if there's an actual answer to that. I think what we do is we try our best every day, and sometimes we win and sometimes we don't. But on balance, we're probably on the upstroke versus on the downstroke. You know, it's an interesting thing. I've been reflecting on this. Lucy and I were speaking about it this morning. So I'm speaking to Aisha about the parenting thing. She went, well, I'll be interested to hear what you say about that. You know, and being a step parent is a bit like policing in the UK. It's by consent.
Mm.
It's not by right. It is different. Mm. Naturally, it's different. You know, I'm an adult that's come into an environment that isn't the kids' choice. They've not chosen to have me in their lives. Mm. They've not chosen the dynamic that happens. That's an independent relationship between Lucy and I.
Mm.
But the kids now have to, you know, come alongside that or not come alongside that as they wish. So there is a sense of consent and a recognition that, you know, Lucy and her ex-husband Mark, you know, they are the girl's parents. And I am another adult in the mix. Mm. So the three of us try our best to maintain our sanity as we try and help Izzy and Katie become even more brilliant than they are already, and, you know, become the adults that they want to be. But I think it is much like anything, Aisha, there's not an end point here. We are just feeling our way, and some days it will be really good and some days it will be really you know, and there'll be days where there's no word said, you know, it's silence. And it's like prizing blood from a stone.
Yeah.
Other days it'll be like, because they're human, you know, they've got their stuff going on. But being a step parent is different. It is a different dynamic. You don't, or I don't, again, not wanting to speak for anyone else, I don't have an unconditional love for Katie and Izzy that their mum and dad do. They're not my children, and that's my choice not to have my own children.
Yeah.
But I am responsible to make sure that this is a safe, comfortable, engaging and inspiring environment for them to be in. And that I'm doing my best to help them be the brilliant people that they want to be. That's my responsibility. And that means sometimes I'll be really mean, or they'll certainly construe it as being mean, when I'll say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not running you to there because I've got stuff to do. Oh, but you're not got any clients. But I've got stuff to do, and it's a priority for me. Running you to there is not a priority for me. I can't do it. Mum can't do it. You'll have to find an alternative. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it wasn't that important.
Yeah.
You know? So there is a balance, and trying to find that balance. And naturally, the challenge for, you know, that dynamic of biological parents and step parents, you know, for Lucy and I, how do we manage that? Well, that's challenging also. I'll quite often say to Lucy, you know, you've got the trump card. You know, our society will trump card the mother over anything else. And so, you know, my opinion may or may not have any grist at all. It may be taken on board, it may not. It will be in there, but actually you may well make a decision that supersedes what I do. We try and be really consistent, and certainly, you know, we're avoid that sort of undermining. But you'll know it with your kids. Mm-hmm. If they don't get what they want from you, they'll go and ask their dad, right? Yeah, so, yeah. You know, or vice versa.
Because, good luck with that.
Because they're sort of, you know, that's what, they're small humans.
Mm-hmm.
They're manipulating an environment to get the best outcome that they want. That's exactly what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
because it will serve them well, you know, as they grow up. We don't want them to be super manipulative, but we want them to find solutions, to be creative, to, you know, get to where they want to go. And that requires that type of work. But, you know, sometimes it is a no. And and that's just that. It's not a no, I don't like you. It's just a no, I can't do that.
Yeah. But looking at it objectively then, because your perception, as you said, is different to Lucy's.
Yeah.
Or your ability to say no maybe is different.
Yeah.
How do you observe the way Lucy deals with those challenges as the, as you said, biological mother, unconditional love, versus the way you would perhaps more objectively deal with those challenges? Where do you see the differences?
Yeah, I think the word there, the key word is really objectively. In fact, you could even possibly go as far as to say sometimes it's quite dispassionate, because it can be quite logical. Whereas actually, if you've got that sense of, I really want to help my children, I don't want to say no to them. Mm-hmm. But actually, I'm looking at my diary and going, oh, I don't know where I'm going to fit that in. So I noticed the tension of the pool, where, you know, I'm just a little bit removed from that, so I don't get that same sort of pool. And that's what I really noticed the difference. And again, I would absolutely not want to be speaking for all step parents. Everyone's in a different situation, but for us, and for me, you know, looking at how I am comparative to Lucy, there is that just a little bit of ability to just step away and go, actually, you know, I can stand outside this, and look in a little bit versus being inside and trying to see out. But I, you know, I'm sort of reluctant to speak for Lucy, because she's just a magnificent mother, and she works very hard, and she's created, you know, through her love and care and challenge, two girls who are opinionated and funny and witty and engaged. And, you know, along with Mark, they've done a great job of raising two girls who are going to do all sorts of amazing things, you know, and it's a privilege to see that. So it's, yeah, it's just a big game of trying to do your best on a daily basis. There's no scorecard here. No. You know, it's easy to get into that trap, isn't it, of thinking, am I doing the right things? Am I doing the wrong things? Just do what's in your heart that feels right, that feels compassionate. And, you know, sometimes that'll land well and sometimes it won't.
And how do you think the kids respond? How do they, what's the difference again in their response to you?
Well, they probably don't ask me for anything, actually. I think it's the boss. That's not true. They do. Quite often I'll find, like, Katie, I'll be in the kitchen maybe doing something, and Katie will come in and she'll just start chattering about stuff. And I'll say, oh, so what do you think about that? And, you know, what are your options there? And, you know, Izzy's much more quiet. She's much much more sort of reflective in how she sort of goes about things. But equally, it's funny, Lucy said to me, she's like, oh, you get loads of chat out of Izzy. And I do, because I'll just say, so what's happened today? Nothing. It can't be nothing happened. Something happened, right? I mean, you got up, you got dressed, you went to school, you did stuff, and now you managed to get back to the car. Something happened. You know, so in a way, I suppose I just sort of continue with the curiosity. And I remember Annie saying to me, she's like, you know, just the change in energy. Again, we're back to energies. The dynamic of perhaps when I was picking the kids up from school, that's not the norm. And as families, we get into really comfortable stroke uncomfortable habits that, you know, you turn up, you pick up the kids at school, how is school? Fine. That's it. That's all you're getting. Eight hours they've been away from you. You know, so changing the energy, sometimes changing the dynamic, can break things out a little bit. So yeah, I think that I noticed that particularly. But it is more about, yeah, I mean, like, I'm super practical. You know, so if this zip's stuck, definitely I am the person to ask for zips. If there's DIY requiring,
very specific challenge there.
Well, you would be amazed. I am amazed at how many zips appear to be malfunctioning. I never knew the zips were so bad.
There's definitely a side hustle business in that somewhere.
A side hustle zip fixer. So yeah, stuff like that and practical stuff. You know, I'm sort of head of adventure. In terms of outdoor activities, So if there's stuff that's, you know, we're going to go paddleboarding or we're going to plan for something, then I'll probably pick that stuff up. You know, and that's because I like to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a sort of aptitude towards it. And it's not Lucy's first love, and so yeah, she loves doing it, but she's got loads of other stuff. Mm. And so I pick up the stuff that you know, that I naturally lean towards, and she picks up the stuff that she naturally leans towards. We're not forcing ourselves into positions where we're doing things that don't chime for us. I think, you know, we often can find ourselves trying to, you know, crush ourselves into a shape that we're not. Mm. And you know when you're doing it because it feels horrible.
Yeah, that's really important, actually, that complementary, isn't it? How can you complement each other?
Yeah.
Rather than trying to be all things to all men.
Yeah.
Can't be all women.
Yeah, yeah. And really recognising, you know, where your strengths lie and where, you know, and celebrating your combined, you know, approach. You know, we're very lucky. We've worked really hard. We are lucky. We've worked really hard, though. Also, you know, thinking about Mark in our setup here, the three of us work really hard as a trio to be good parents and to work together. So, you know, we're regularly having Mark here for dinner, or we're going down to see him. We're seeing him all the time. And so there is that chat going on. And we're playing each of us to our own, you know, abilities. And I'll sometimes be bringing in a different perspective that, you know, is a little bit removed from the cauldron of being the direct parents. But, you know, there is just something about celebrating individuals that are in that parenting space, because it is big. Mm. It can feel small sometimes, I suspect. Mm. You know, when one of the kids has been up sick all night and the other one's been doing something else, and you're like, you and your husband are just looking at each other going, this was your fault.
Yeah.
I believe in you entirely. You know, I mean, that sort of, you know, the challenge that you do have as a couple to just go, man, what happened?
I think it also plays into, not plays into, probably the wrong wording, is when you talk about having a slight external view, external perception on something. And also if you're a single parent and you haven't got necessarily the complementary other person to rely on to create that sort of environment, is how can you get that external perspective actually for your kids, which is a bit more removed in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
It shows them a different side, which maybe the parents being in it all the time, or parent being in all the time, that doesn't have. So how can we create a network around our kids, mm-hmm. a support mm-hmm. network of friends, of family members, whoever it is, but who provide a different outlook,
mm-hmm.
different ages, different, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So actually, they get a really rounded view of what's going on, rather than just the parents who are very close, too close to them, emotionally and physically all the time.
Mm.
It's getting a bit of space, farming them off. Well, I do a bit with other people, but how can we just at least expose them to
different
perceptions?
Yeah,
our own.
And you know, there's that old adage of it takes a community to raise a child, and. Again, this is just an opinion or an observation, rather, of we've got smaller and smaller and smaller, and we've lost confidence to recognise that actually it does take a community. And you've shrunk, you know, kids walking to school. Does that happen? Probably not. You know, they're in a car with their parent to the school gate and they're back. You know, are they going to see their friends? Are they just meeting up randomly with their mates and hanging out, or are they being run to a particular appointment? They to have that appointment, they're picked up, they come back. You know, it's the same for us. How do we open our opportunities to have more organic interaction? And that is challenging. And again, you know, I'm going to stay to the fact that, you know, I'm deeply privileged that, you know, I'm not thinking, actually, do I put the oven on or do I wash the clothes? I'm not in that situation. It makes a big difference. You know, parenting in poverty is just challenging, full stop. And we are privileged. And actually, as a society, we need to lean towards more of this. How do we, as a society, push towards creating greater community sense? You know, we'd recently moved house, not very far. We moved from the top of the village to the bottom of the village, but and in where we were previously, it was a little close, and next door there were two little lads, and then there was Izzy and Katie, and then there was another little lad, Joshua, in the house next door. And, you know, the kids were out and about on the front lawn, and they were meeting each other, and then the kids were coming into the van, and I'm like, yeah, that's okay, but you can't play with that. You know, and that interaction where we feel they're getting lots of engagement. So, you know, making spaces, places, and opportunities where kids can interact with all sorts of different people, different colours, different abilities, different opinions. Mm. You know, I'm not sure I have a solution to that. I think Liz Truss has just been employed to think about those sorts of things. So yes. we'll leave that to her hands. But, you know, it's that, you know, we are responsible for the environments that we create. And sometimes we need to step back and go, actually, it's constrained.
My husband often talks about this, because when, you know, he grew up in the 80s, as we all, most of us did. You know,
so. Yeah, I mean, I was born in the 70s, so I mean, I don't know how I survived.
I'm with you there. And in the 80s, or late 70s, early 80s, you would go out, and I remember this, you'd go out and knock for your friends. You know, we didn't have anything at home. There's no online, there's nothing, there's no TV, there's nothing. So you went out and you knocked on the door and you said, hi, do you want to come out to play? And if you were, he lived in a cul-de-sac type area, so they'd be out safely because there were no cars coming through, which doesn't make a difference. But the kids would all just be in there until it basically got dark, and they'll be called in for their tea, whatever time that was. And that was it. And that was a hugely rich childhood in that sense. You know, the interaction, social interaction was unbelievable. And I had that to a lesser degree because we lived on a road which wasn't as safe to play on, but we had friends we used to knock for and play hopscotch. Remember playing hopscotch on the pavement?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah, and now it just doesn't, as you say, it doesn't, online, obviously, big issue when it comes to things like that, but it just doesn't seem to be a natural inclination because we as parents probably aren't allowing it to happen. Mm. For the kids to want, my kids specifically, didn't want to go out and just knock on someone's door and say, just want to come do something, whatever it is.
Let's hang out. Yeah.
Yeah, just hang out. But again, that's up to us.
Yeah.
To encourage it to happen, or to create the space for that to happen.
Yeah, yeah, and feel comfortable and safe. You know, I mean, I live right in the South Downs National Park, right? Mm. I am quite happy to go out in the evening into the dark and walk in the dark on my own on the South Downs. Doesn't bother me. Mm. I feel safe to do it. I do not believe that I'm going to get nobbled by somebody. Mm. It's highly unlikely. It might happen, but in the realms of probabilities, it's quite small, right?
Yeah.
But I notice, you know, Lucy and the girls, they're not that inclined in that way, you know. So what's the narrative that has made them feel actually you should be fearful being in the outdoors? The outdoors is the safest place you can be. It's who we are. Mm. It's where we've come from. You know, so creating those environments in the outdoors, and you know, we do through the forest bathing, which is again, it's a space. But you know, reconnecting people with nature, to go, this is a safe space for me to be. I want to go and be in those trees and just sit there and do nothing but listen and be. I'm safe to do that. That's okay. You know, so encouraging, you know, and as I'm speaking to you, I'm thinking I should just, you know, be encouraging the kids, just go and have a wander, like, go, you know, go up over there and do that sort of stuff. Katie's doing more of that now, obviously, because she's a bit older and she's, you know, disappearing off to the gap with her mates with no idea what's going on. No idea. But you just have to trust that she's sensible, which she is.
Yeah.
And she'll make mistakes and she'll have experiences that maybe she'll think, go away with one there. But that's her life. And it's right that she has the opportunity to take risk and to try different things. That we should all have that.
Yeah,
because it's imperative in our evolution as humans to be able to take risk and try things.
And we can support that risk, you know, as parents.
Absolutely,
we can,
right.
We can take small steps to, so it's risk, but small risk, and then it builds to slightly bigger risk as we understand that they are capable of not getting themselves into humongous amounts of trouble. So I will drop my daughter to the shopping centre and she can go off wandering for a couple of hours with her friends, and that's fine. But I'll be nearish. I'll be somewhere close enough that if anything happens and she wants to be taken home, I'm within sort of 15 minutes and that's fine. So it's allowing her the freedom, but with a little bit of structure. And then once she's happy with that, then she can do something else and build and build and build.
That's right.
That's fine. I think it's about how can you just encourage it where you feel safe too and comfortable.
That's right.
But allowing them to express themselves as much as possible anyway. Mm-hmm. And I live in London, so it's trickier because it's not always safe.
No, well, that's right. It's not. I mean, there are facts, right? And context is deeply important. I live in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, you might well get hit by a car. That's a definite possibility. You could get stampeded by a cow. That's also a possibility. It's unlikely, you know, but so there are, the dynamics are different. Yeah. So how do we, you know, responsibly, I guess that's the thing, isn't it? How do we responsibly create spaces of confidence and curiosity that our kids can move out into, so they get a real sense of who they are? They're not a child. They're not the child of. They're Johnny or Lucy or, you know, Sophie or whatever. And they're creating their own identity in the way that they want to create it. And it's not constrained by all of those, you know, gossamer thin threads that are not seen in the relationships that we have as family members that do constrain sometimes. And change that environment. I'm pretty sure Katie was at Reading, at the Reading Festival a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure she was fully 100% Katie that she wanted to be there.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, did that mean that Lucy and Mark were nearly sick with worry? Yes, it definitely did.
Yeah.
But
again, you set them up as best you can.
Yeah, be sensible.
Yeah.
Look after yourself. Don't take drinks from people that you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, keep an eye on what you've got in your hand. Mm-hmm. You know, and hope for, and you know, sort of hope for the best that, you know, they're not going to be the percentage that has a terrible experience, because it does happen.
Yeah.
But even knowing that, you know, we can often mitigate our risk in that space. Not always. Nobody's blamed for being a victim. They are a victim, and that's been somebody's choice to make them such. But it's it's a tightrope. I think
indeed.
You know, my mum is the most risk averse person in the world. I mean, really, truly. And my sister and I were a calamity as kids. You know, we fell out of trees, we fell off horses, we got, you know, like all sorts of stuff. We were never in out of A&E. How somebody didn't go? We need to have a discussion about this. I don't know. And that's how, you know, that's how we've gone on, how we've grown as people. So all of the energy that I bring to, you know, what I do is founded on a basis of I'm self-sufficient. I have the ability to be and do in an environment as I need to and as I want to. And I'll be able to fix most of the things that will happen around me. And I have confidence in that. But that's only been created by allowing, you know, me to have accidents and to take risks and to find myself in situations where I thought, probably wouldn't do that again.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's hard. I think it's hard when, you know, the your children are your most precious thing ever. The last thing you want is for them to have something happen to them. But it's absolutely not our responsibility as adults to constrain them from growing to be brilliant adults. Mm-hmm. It's our job to support them in that space. So yeah, a real tightrope, Aisha, I think.
It reminds me of a conversation I had last week with my mum and dad, and I said to them, because now I'm old enough to be able to tell them what I actually did when I was growing up. Did I ever tell you that when I was in Cambodia travelling that I got on the back of a random Cambodian man's moped and went to a party? I went, oh my God, if we'd known that. And I said, I don't think I'd necessarily do that again now.
No. Maybe.
But I did it, and it was, luckily, it was fine. It was a great party. And it was safe and it was fine. But it might not have been. It might have turned out differently. So maybe I wouldn't do it again. But I took a calculated risk because I thought it would be fun, and it was. But it's, if they'd known that then, they would have 100% said, you're not doing that, which is probably actually the right thing to say.
it might not be. Actually, as we look now with an objective eye, it was the right thing for you to go and do. Because you had a great time, you have an experience, you have material for the memoirs that you wouldn't have otherwise had.
Yeah, very true. They still won't agree with you.
Of course they won't. You know, but there's, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm not deeply read in the sort of social sciences around this. But the Western way of parenting is quite interesting. It's really protectionist. You know, I remember reading something many years ago now about Indigenous peoples in the Amazon rainforest, and they're quite happy. The kids are running around doing their own thing, and you know, they're playing with knives. And you've got Western, you know, observers going and going, oh, they're playing with knives, and there's an open fire. And you know, the parents say, well, they'll only cut themselves once or burn themselves once, and they'll not do it again.
Mm.
you know, so just, it's not that we love them less. It's just that actually that, this is where we are. This is, these are the things that we have around us.
Mm.
And we need to sort of be mindful of that and yeah. recognize that we do risk mitigate where we can, but we don't squeeze risk out of the environment at all, completely, because otherwise we end up with people who are frightened of risk.
Well, yeah, frightened of the world.
Yeah, and it becomes really difficult, right? Mm. Because not only does that perhaps constrain you in terms of your own personal ambition, but professionally, how do you then become innovative? Because if you risk failure or risk being seen to fail,
yeah,
that's hard. You know, so building confidence in our kids and helping them, you know, recognize where maybe it was a little too far. You know, and what did they think about that? How did it feel? Were you frightened?
Mm.
Yeah, I was actually. Mm. Okay, so what would you do differently the next time? Mm. It's not like, what were you doing? Are you mad?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't need to be ratcheted to that. It's like, let's think about it dispassionately. What happened? What did you want to do? What did happen? Was it good or bad? What would you do differently?
Mm. And it's happened. It's happened.
You can't wind back the clock. Yeah. Whatever's happened's happened. Yeah. So it's endlessly fascinating, I think. Aisha, I think there's, you could probably talk about this.
Actually, I was going to say this conversation could be endless in the absolutely best way possible, because I could talk to you for hours. And I'm sitting there going, Mike's going to make a cup of tea and just sort of settle in for the day. But we've probably got other things to do.
Well, I don't know. I think my day's looking quite quiet, actually. I've got some stuff to make for dinner. Lucy's got a busy day today, so I'm on dinner.
Nice.
And I've been a proper geek this morning, actually. I said to Lucy, I was like, do you think it's sad that I was using the rain radar on AccuWeather to see whether I can hang the washing out or not? Yep.
Practical.
You are a nerd.
Practical.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's probably going to be okay. I'm going to get out. So yeah, I'm doing some domestic things in little bits and pieces.
Well, that sounds like a good day.
Yeah, just it is. I know there's quite a lot of work coming into the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not rushing towards things. It'll soon arrive.
It'll arrive in its own, it's in due course. It will arrive.
Confidence.
Yes.
Yeah, confidence that it'll come.
And confidence, also confidence in quiet time.
Yeah.
Confidence is okay to be quiet and calm for a little bit.
Yeah.
You've got the opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm mindful, you know, you've just come back from holiday. And again, sort of reflecting on that, you come back from holiday, you've had a week away. If you're lucky, you've had two. And you're straight back into it.
Mm.
You're expected to go from flip-flops and swimsuit to Excel and Teams. You know, the default function has been given the swift boot out the window, and suddenly the executive function has had to go 100 miles. And actually, how are we planning a transition so we're coming up to pace? We're not going from 0 to 100 miles an hour. We're planning a transition in the same ways we should plan the transition as we wind down to holidays. So it's not these you suddenly get back on your first day and you just go, 1,000 emails. So there's something, those transitional spaces, you know, we see them very importantly in nature. We're crossing boundaries, one space to the other. What we're noticing, I think we would do well to notice the transitions in a day to day, you know, work context as well. How can we be kinder to ourselves in those spaces?
Yeah, there's so much we can obviously take from the work you do with bringing nature in. There's so much we can just take from that into our four walls, I'm sure. So on that note, Natalie, it's been an absolute joy to talk to you. Thank you. And where can people find out more about you, about walking partnerships, about forest bathing, all of the things that you
do? That's kind of you. It's been a real pleasure, Aisha. Thank you so much for having me on today and to chat about all sorts of different things. So where can people find me? LinkedIn, of course. You can find me on LinkedIn. I have a website, which is nataliesharing.com. You know, all my details are on LinkedIn. So if you want to get in touch for a chat, always happy to do that. Better still, if you want to have a walk and a talk in the wilderness, be happy to do that as well. But
recommend it. Having done it once, I'm doing it again with you in October. I'm not sure.
Brilliant. Weather. I'm afraid I won't be there in October.
Having done it once with you already, highly recommend a day out with Nats and Annie and Lucy.
Yeah.
Walking partnerships. Little plug there.
Yeah, you'll find walking partnerships on LinkedIn as well. Certainly, I know Annie Townend has a link on her website as well. But that's been a privilege to get that started. We're excited.
It's brilliant. It's really good.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much. Have a lovely domestic day, calm domestic day until the work approaches, and carry on walking the tightrope.
Yeah, balancing.
Balancing. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Natalie.
You're most welcome. Thank you, Aisha.
Hey.
You can find out how to work with me at aishamurray.com, connect with me on LinkedIn, or check out my free resources and quizzes at aishamurray.com/resources.